a chat I had with the two co-conveners of FARA. Do you know FARA at all?
No, and you can you give a bit more information?
Yeah, Friends of Australian Rock Art. They're the group that's credited with securing National Heritage listing for the Murujunga rock art in 2007 over in Western Australia, which is being threatened by the extension of the Woodside giant LNG export facility until 2070, given by the federal government. The trigger for a legal assessment of the project at the Commonwealth level under the EPBC Act was the National Heritage listing of the area secured in 2007. I got to chat with Susan Swain and Judith Hugo. They're coming over for next week because on the 21st of July, there's a federal court case is opening up to dispute the federal government's decision to allow the extension. Just before we get to the conversation that I had with the two conveners, they've got an event at the State Library on the 19th, Sunday the 19th of July. It's got an action-packed group of people talking about the issues, and it's called The Endangered Rock Art of Murujunga. Can it survive? It's going to be at the State Library of Victoria, Sunday the 19th of July, 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. If you want to find more information or get tickets, www.fara.com.au. This is the chat I had with the two women.
My name's Judith Hugo, and I'm co-convener of Fred Australian Rock Art, along with Susan Swain. We're both co-conveners. And FARA, that's Friends of Australian Rock Art, has been fighting to protect, preserve and promote this ancient rock art of Murujunga ever since 2006. And luckily, in 2007, we managed to get National Heritage listing for it by Malcolm Turnbull, who was the Environment Minister at the time. And that, by doing that, has ensured that today we can bring this case in the federal court where it will be heard under the EPBC Act, which is designed to protect national heritage listed places. It doesn't matter whether they're world heritage listed, but national heritage listing is the key, is the trigger in this case. So we're very thrilled to have been able to have done that way back in 2007. And our case is about to be heard in the federal court.
Now, the reason for why you've told us the legal trigger. Now, it's obvious that it's taken a long. You're playing the long game, because otherwise it wouldn't be possible for the people of Australia to defend this heritage, because the federal government would just make a decision and move ahead. This is really important work that you've been doing.
Yes, well, the federal government has gone ahead and made this very controversial decision without considering that the National Heritage listing gives us even more protection for the rock art. So that is really what we're contesting in our legal case, which will be heard from the 21st to the 24th of July in the federal court. We're also contesting that Minister Watt did not consider all the facts that were before him, that he certainly did not consider sufficiently the scientific evidence that the rock art was being destroyed by chemical emissions from industry. And we hope that we're actually having a judicial review, and hoping that this will be on what our case turns, is the fact that he didn't make, he made a very flawed decision at the time.
The minister failed in his duty to consider the full range of economic impacts of the proposal and improperly relied on economic benefits claimed by Woodside in allowing the project to proceed despite its ongoing impacts on the rock art. That's what you're claiming. Does that imply that the government appears to be a little bit captured by Woodside's advice rather than doing their own advice? It's not independent?
Well, it's interesting that in WA, when it came up for the minister to for the environment to approve it, and it was approved, you have the right of public appeal. And in WA, we had 776 written submissions to the appeals convener saying, this is the wrong decision. It shouldn't be approved. But they ignored all that. They approved it and then passed that approval to Minister Watt, who then took it as, well, if Woodside and WA say it's good to go, I'm going to give it the tick of approval as well, in spite of public discussion saying it should actually be looked at again and again and again because it hasn't met the criteria of a place that is preserved for culture. It's the fact that they just ignore that amazing 1 million piece of rock art and that gallery of heritage culture that is there that is just being destroyed by the emissions from industry on the borough.
The other thing about it is that inappropriate considered Woodside's claims regarding the technical feasibility of the measures to reduce acid gas. I mean, the minister doesn't deny that there will be an impact, but he seems to think that he relies on Woodside's so-called technical overview as if they aren't self-interested.
This is where the argument comes in, that he's considered their economic interests over the cultural heritage, because the original conditions that he put before them and were contested very strongly by Woodside over quite a few weeks. Their main contention was that they didn't want the expense of having to put emissions reduction technology onto their plant because it would be expensive. And so they managed to convince him that it would not be financially viable for them. And so in that case, he decided that their economic benefits were what should be considered over and above the huge cultural significance of this rock art. I mean, it's 50,000 years old. It's there are about 2 million pieces, but it's the most important thing about the rock art is it's not just a single event in a country's history, like the pyramids in Egypt, or like the Lascaux Caves, or like Stonehenge. This is a continual record of humankind's existence over 50,000 years. And it's very interesting to see in the carvings in the rock art reflect this, because during the last ice age, when the waters were right out, the carvings were of terrestrial mammals, and some of them were actually prehistoric mammals, which are now disappeared. But as the waters came back in, about 17,000 years ago, they changed, and you've got a lot more marine creatures which were depicted, like sharks and crabs and dugongs and things like that. So it's the only place in the world where there is a 50,000-year record of humankind survival from one particular climate scenario to another.
You know, it takes my breath away that we have a minister that would say, given what you've just said, that the taking of the action, despite proposed avoidance and mitigation measures, is likely to result in residual impacts to the values of the National Heritage Place. However, he considers the impacts were outweighed by the social or economic factors. It's the most incredible short-sighted understanding of the importance of this gallery of work.
Yes, and the fact that he uses the term residual impact gives you the impression that it's very minimal. But in fact, if Woodside will not adapt emissions reduction technology, which is used in these sort of industries right around the world, the rock art will continue to damaged until 2070, which is where the extension has been allowed to, and there won't be any left. It'll be totally destroyed by then. In fact, it's interesting reading the minister's statement of reasons. He says that he recognises the significance of the rock art, that it's the oldest and everything else. He also realises, through scientific matter before him, that it is possible to mitigate the impact of emissions on the rock art. But he said, in consideration of Woodside's economic rationale, I rather fall on the side of Wood's case. So, you know, he really digs himself into he shoots himself in the foot, because he says, I recognise everything and I recognise it can be mitigated, but I'll let Woodside carry on with its damage.
It's just incredibly shocking. FARA is a voluntary organisation, isn't it? And it means that all the different people that have and skills that have been brought together to bear to defend what should be not even need to be defended, in fact, but which is so valuable that a whole group of people have come together. That's correct, isn't it?
Yes, we were a very small voluntary organisation. There are only 10, 11 of us on the committee, but we've been working very hard, and with help from various environmental consultants, and now with an amazing legal team, which is Johnson Legal out of Sydney, and a very, very formidable group of barristers, we have formulated this very, very strong case, which we feel has very, very reasonable grounds for success.
But the other interesting thing is, we have had a UN special rapporteur ask to join our case, because she said no longer can people around the world approve emitting projects without understanding the ramifications of that on climate change for the whole world. And so the UN Special Rapporteur had to ask the judge, could she be included in the case? And over objections from Woodside, yes, she was admitted. And so we have an international overview of the significance of this case, of how important this decision is worldwide.
The case is starting in Melbourne. The federal court case is starting in Melbourne on July the 21st. You've also got legal action going on in Western Australia, which is going to happen later. But this case in Melbourne, you are also have a seminar going on the 19th of July to prepare people so that people can understand some of the ramifications. Do you want to talk a little bit to my listeners about that particular seminar, which is going to be at the State Library?
Yes, as you say, it will be on Sunday the 19th at 2 o'clock. We have a stellar lineup of speakers. We have Raylene Cooper, who's a Murujuga custodian, who's coming over to be with us. We also have Ken Malvaney, who's the world expert on the Murujuga rock art and has been working alongside us for many years. Then there's John Black, who arrived, came up on a tour to the Burrup and was absolutely horrified at what he saw, with industry growing right in the midst of all this rock art, this fragile surface of the rock art. And he is the one who did a lot scientific investigation to show categorically that it was being destroyed, but of course the government won't listen to that. And then we have Piers Verstegen, who is an environmental consultant, and he will talk about not only the impact to the rock art, but also the implications for climate change, which are very huge, and that really should be considered. But the time has come now where fossil fuel industries have to really be responsible for their emissions, because with them being allowed to increase by government approval, they are contributing more and more to greenhouse gases. And as we know, the horrendous results of climate change, the floods, the increasing heat, the bushfires and rising tides, rising waters and coral bleaching, everything is the result of, with the oceans warming, is the result of climate change. And so he will bring that very much to the fore as well. So we urge you, please come. This is a very important lecture that will give you an amazing insight into why Murujuga is so special and so desperately needs protecting.
Well, people can get tickets and more information by going to www.fara.com.au. It's interesting, isn't it, that the federal government minister should be talking about balancing social and economic issues against the integrity of the gallery of rock art. But in actual fact, what's at stake is actually climate change and other aspects as well, which are incredibly expensive in terms of the economy and society. The capture of our federal government and state governments by fossil fuel industry is quite alarming, actually.
Yes, and of all the states, WA is the most captured state because our premier just does the bidding of Woodside. So, you know, it's time that ridiculous partnership was broken, because it's not doing Australia or our people or the world any good at all. And the time has come, and that's why we're going to court.
Thank you very much for talking to me, both of you.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, Annie.